From Philadelphia to Erie, Harrisburg to Greensburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania is losing billions of dollars each year due to Medicaid fraud. That takes money and health care away from those who truly need it. Megan Martin of the Commonwealth Foundation joins us with details. Cities, including Pittsburgh, continue to suffer from high office vacancy rates. Frank Gamrat and Alex Sodini are here with an Allegheny Institute report. And as celebrations unfold commemorating the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, Emily Green Bry from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary on why still we must fight to protect our God-given rights. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Megan Martin of the Commonwealth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. If you build it, they will tax. Pennsylvania is poised to be in the forefront of the artificial intelligence revolution and home to numerous of the data centers that will power it. But even before they are built, some lawmakers and other pro-tax groups are looking to place an even higher tax burden on data centers than the existing taxes, which make the Commonwealth one of the states in the nation with the highest business taxes. The state's consumer advocate and at least one member of the Public Utility Commission are urging the taxation, claiming the currently non-existent data centers are driving up electricity costs. Not blamed, of course, were state and federal policies, which forced the closure of coal-fired generation plants and have slowed the development of any new power plant. Pennsylvania State Treasurer Stacey Garrity is poised to become the Republican Party's nominee for governor, but the GOP choice for lieutenant governor is unclear. Candidates for governor and lieutenant governor run separately in the primary, but they are joined together as a ticket in the general election. To date, three names have surfaced, including State Senator Chris Dush of Jefferson County, Bucks County businessman Brian Thomas, and John Ventry of Westmoreland County, who briefly ran for governor 4 years ago, but failed to acquire the signatures needed to get on the ballot. The state Republican Party will meet February 7th to endorse a candidate for lieutenant governor. Garrity has been meeting with potential candidates, but has not yet announced a choice. Garrity and her running mate will square off in November against incumbent Governor Josh Shapiro and Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis. U.S. Secretary of Health Robert F. Kennedy Jr. staged a Make America Healthy Again rally in the Pennsylvania State Capitol Rotunda this past Wednesday. Kennedy was in the Commonwealth to tout the new nutritional standards established by his department. Kennedy has undertaken a wholesale review of the Department of Health's long-established policies and standards with an eye toward helping Americans improve their health. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. There has been a lot of news coverage over so-called cuts to Medicaid spending. But in Pennsylvania, state spending on Medicaid has dramatically increased. Worse, billions of dollars of that spending have been lost to fraud. Megan Martin is the Chief Operating Officer and Chief Legal Counsel at the Commonwealth Foundation. She is here with details. Megan, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Megan, we're going to talk primarily about Medicaid here, but we also have Medicare, and a lot of times people don't know the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. So Let's start off by having you tell us the difference.
The Medicare program, and I like to think of it, it takes care of our senior citizens. So it is a program to take care of the senior citizens across the country and across our Commonwealth. While Medicaid is geared toward taking care of and helping low-income individuals, in particular low-income children, senior citizens, and individuals with disabilities.
So the Medicaid program, it is not just a federal program. There's a division here and the states have a big say. Tell us a little bit about that.
Medicaid is actually the nation's and Pennsylvania's largest welfare program. In Pennsylvania, it consumes one-third of the state budget. So given that we have an almost $51 billion budget, that is an incredible amount of money. And unfortunately, in Pennsylvania, Medicaid is growing at a very unsustainable rate. And that is a great concern for me, and it should be a great concern for your listeners. And let me be specific for you, Loman. Mm-hmm. So between 2018 and 2025, Pennsylvania's Department of Human Services, which is the agency that administers the Medicaid program, their budget grew by 58%. And during that same time, Pennsylvania's population increased by only 2%. And we learned just last week from the data released by U-Haul that Pennsylvania is in the top six states of states where people are leaving that state. And we are lumped with states like California, New York, I believe Illinois, New Jersey. And so we have this unsustainable increase in Medicaid spending, and we have a decrease in the population. And so it's something, we also have a $5 billion structural deficit in our budget here in Pennsylvania. So those kind of numbers are unsustainable. They are alarming. And Pennsylvania's taxpayers should be concerned. And what I would say is coming on the heels of what we just learned is has been happening in the state of Minnesota, where taxpayers there were defrauded of at least $9 billion in Medicaid fraud. You know, Loman, I'm a lawyer, and there's a term of art called something that shocks the conscience. To me, that shocks the conscience, and it should have the people of Pennsylvania, and it should have the government of Pennsylvania, the executive branch that administers this program, that's responsible for administering this program in a way that is fiscally responsible and that is done in a way that takes care of the taxpayers' hard-earned dollars. It should be a wake-up call to everybody. And I will tell you, Loman, here in Pennsylvania, for anybody who's listening to this program right now, you might be wondering, is Pennsylvania next? If so, is it because of mismanagement or is it because of fraud? Well, I think there's a case to be made that it's because of both, and the data out there supports it.
While we're on the component of this that involves fraud, Megan, it is estimated that some $2.3 billion, billion with a B, is lost to fraud. And even Governor Josh Shapiro, back when he was Attorney General, thought the loss might be more than that. How do we get into a situation where we're losing not hundreds of thousands or millions or hundreds of millions, but billions of dollars? That's a lot of money.
It's an incredible large amount of money, Loman. And I can tell you this, we have data going back to 2019 where Pennsylvania's Medicaid improper payment rate stood at 14%. And that's what cost Pennsylvanians $2.3 billion in that 1 year. Similarly, our SNAP program also has an error rate. And SNAP, for your listeners, that's more commonly known as food stamps. That error rate stands at more than 10%, which again costs Pennsylvania taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars. And with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, now there's going to be some accountability for Pennsylvania and other states. If we cannot decrease that SNAP error rate, Pennsylvania taxpayers are going to be on the hook for another $1 billion because of those erroneous payments. And it is something, it's been a long time coming, and it's something that we have to address here in Pennsylvania.
Of course, Congress has been looking at ways to cut the federal budget, or at least conservative Republicans in the House in particular, also in the Senate, are trying to find ways to cut back on expenditures in all of these programs. And of course, Megan, they get accosted by the left. Oh, you're insensitive. You are hurting people. You're taking food from the mouth of children, et cetera, et cetera. Isn't allowing rampant fraud and abuse taking food from the mouths of children?
It most certainly is, Loman, and I would say that compassion and accountability are not mutually exclusive principles. And I would further say that holding government accountable for how they administer these programs is more compassionate because the funds are limited and there are many people who genuinely need to avail themselves of the services that Medicaid provides. I said it earlier, it's low-income children, it's our seniors, it's individuals with disabilities. But when thousands of people, thousands of organizations are committing fraud and taking money away from the folks who actually genuinely need it the most. To me, that is what really is taking the food out of the mouths of those who need it the most.
We are talking with Megan Martin, who is Chief Operating Officer and General Counsel at the Commonwealth Foundation. We'll learn a little bit more about the Commonwealth Foundation in a few minutes. But Megan, you talked about the extreme increase in Medicaid expenditures in Pennsylvania over the last 6 or 7 years. What happened? That was the program expanded? How did we get into a situation where we had that amount of an increase in expenditures?
Well, I think a lot of this lemon stems back to COVID. So during 2020, during our COVID epidemic, the federal government suspended any kind of meaningful audits when it came to the Medicaid program, and in most cases prohibited states from pulling off the rolls anybody who was ineligible for these programs. And they greatly expanded these programs to individuals so that individuals could access them. And so it's something that's been going on for a long time. And what we are learning is this explosion of individuals on these Medicaid rolls. Again, it's taking services away from those who really need it. And it does a lot of individuals a huge disservice, because individuals who are able-bodied and who don't have any children, any dependents, you know, they should be empowered and encouraged to work, to get a job, to not be dependent on government. We want them to thrive individually and to have opportunity and prosperity, and being dependent on the government is not a way to make that happen.
In order to also cut down on the number of people who are eligible for Medicaid, it's often been suggested by reformers that we should have work requirements and things of that sort. Is that happening? Is it likely to happen?
The One Big Beautiful Bill Act codified work requirements. However, we don't have that yet here in Pennsylvania. It was passed twice by our General Assembly and twice vetoed by Governor Tom Wolf, who was Governor Josh Shapiro's predecessor. So it has been passed in recent years, and Commonwealth Foundation ardently supports work requirements. And I will tell you this, we've done polling on it, Loman, and 7 out of 10 Pennsylvanians agree with us, and they would like to see work requirements, you know, common sense government reforms like work requirements for these kinds of programs.
Any movement toward putting income limits on things as well? Now, this is sort of getting a little bit more into the healthcare issue than the Medicaid issue per se, but we've seen a number of folks who are in a six-figure income situation who are receiving either SNAP benefits or are receiving Obamacare subsidies for healthcare. Should we not put a limit to how much people can make and still get these benefits?
I think that this year's state budget addressed it a little bit in terms of, I know now they're going to be conducting routine cross checks on wage records as well as on actually death certificates to, in terms of assessing eligibility. And so I think we've made small steps, and obviously we need to take more steps.
Yeah, dead people don't need SNAP benefits.
That's exactly right.
But sadly, there are a lot of people who are, in fact, deceased, who others are, in their name, defrauding the government of these benefits.
Oh, most certainly. In 2024, Pennsylvania charged more Medicaid fraud cases than any other state in the country. The Attorney General recouped a little over $11 million in Medicaid fraud. And actually, one of those cases had an instance where a single Medicaid provider was enrolling people, and one person was deceased, you know, and enrolled after the fact. So it does happen. And again, I come back to, the government needs to be a responsible fiscal steward of the taxpayers' hard-earned dollars, of your money, my money, and the money of your listeners.
We are again talking with Megan Martin, who is the Chief Operating Officer and General Counsel at the Commonwealth Foundation. We, of course, do have folks from the Commonwealth Foundation on our show quite a bit. Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation joins us for Capital Watch every other week. But Megan, for those who may not be aware, tell us just a little bit about the Commonwealth Foundation.
Sure. Thanks, Loman. Commonwealth Foundation is Pennsylvania's free market think tank, and we turn ideas into public policies that are going to empower all Pennsylvanians to thrive.
And if we have listeners who would like to read more about the topic of Medicaid and SNAP benefits and all the fraud and abuse to fix the problem, where can they find you online?
Sure, commonwealthfoundation.org.
Megan Martin of the Commonwealth Foundation. Megan, thank you for being here.
Thank you for me, Loman.
Since the COVID epidemic, many center city areas have struggled with high office vacancy rates. Pittsburgh is no exception. To learn more about the current situation, we turn to Frank Gamrat and Alex Sodini for this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. Today I am joined by Frank Gamrat, Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute. Frank, how are you today?
I'm good, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing very well. You recently wrote a brief discussing the Q3 vacancy rates for office space in the city of Pittsburgh. This is something that you've covered for a while, and it remains an issue in the city of Pittsburgh and in other cities across the country, really, since the pandemic. Can you just provide our listeners with a brief background on how this situation came about?
Oh, absolutely. And I think this is very important for not just cities across the Commonwealth, but smaller towns as well. When the pandemic hit in 2020, a lot of folks were sent to work from home. So they were no longer required to be into their office. And as a result, they kind of enjoyed that. And of course, the pandemic itself really lasted about a year and a half, 2 years. So people were just not coming into town. They were working from home. And even when the pandemic was sort of cleared and then officially ended, they stayed home. Now, that sounds all fine, because you think, well, as long as they're being productive, who cares if they're at home? But what ended up happening was the firms that were employing them downtown decided that, well, hey, we don't need all this empty space. We're going to downsize our footprint in this office building. So then the office buildings become a little more empty, i.e. the vacancy rate, and the value of the building is dependent upon the revenue that it generates. Well, if you have fewer offices in there paying for the space, then you're making less money. If you make less money, you're saying, hey, well, I should pay less in property taxes. And then, of course, they go to the county reassessment board and say, well, we shouldn't be paying this much in taxes because our building's not worth what it once was because it's no longer making money because no one's in the offices. And the county assessors went, okay, we agree. You now have to pay less property tax. Well, that affects the school district, the municipality, and the county itself. And over these last 4 years, a lot of the major buildings in downtown Pittsburgh have gotten reassessment breaks that have started to affect the coffers of the school district, the city, and the county. And so now this is really front and center. This practice during the pandemic has held on. People still want to work from home. Recently, PNC Bank had an edict from their CEO saying, starting May 3rd, we expect all of our employees back in the office 5 days. Well, needless to say, a lot of employees are upset because, well, we like working from home. We're saving on commuting costs. We have to pay for parking. We just don't want to be there. And management's saying, well, we think you're more productive in the office. We think that you get more done. So this work from home culture is still hanging on, and it's costing the taxing bodies a whole lot of money. So we started keeping track of vacancy rates long before this happened. It's just become a bigger problem knowing that the taxing bodies are having difficulties due to these empty office buildings.
Thank you, Frank. And so what does the overall data look like for Pittsburgh's latest results?
Right. And we're talking third quarter 2025, and that was the latest data available as I started doing this. But office vacancy rate for the entirety of downtown Pittsburgh, and we say entirety, we're talking all classes of buildings, 24.2%. 1 year prior, it was 19.5%, and prior to the pandemic, it was 16.9%. So vacancy rates in downtown Pittsburgh, which we call the Central Business District, have been remaining high really since 2021, 2022. And look, for cities across the country, they're all experiencing the same thing. That work from home culture really has hurt them all, including Philadelphia. We keep track of it on this side of the state here in Pittsburgh, and it's just hanging in there.
What is the difference between Class A and Class B office space, and how are those differences manifested in the data?
Right. Office space is split up by its luxuriousness, if that's the word we're looking for. Class A space being the primo, top-of-the-line office space, and of course, it comes with a higher rental rate per square foot. Class B space and lower tends to be older buildings, and I think a lot of it has to do with amenities. Class A office buildings tend to have things like coffee shop and little cafes inside them, maybe a fitness area or a dry cleaner, you know, things that employees enjoy. Class B office space tends to be older buildings that at the time those types of amenities weren't even thought of. And so they tend to get less of a price on the market. So your bigger companies, BNY, Mellon, PNC, et cetera, their buildings are what we call Class A space because they're the primo building. Some of the younger law firms, accounting firms may be in lesser lease space because it's what they can afford. What we're noticing is that this latest trend of, okay, we don't need this space, but we want our employees to come back, has caused a lot of firms to choose Class A office space as a way of enticing their workers back into the the fold.
What is net absorption, and what can it tell us about where firms may be relocating?
Net absorption is a data point, and all of my data comes from the real estate firm Jones Lang LaSalle, JL.com. Net absorption, asking the question, how much space is going from leased to unleased, and that's net negative absorption, or how much space is going from unleased to leased, and that's net positive absorption. Basically, it tracks the question of, are firms giving up space or are firms taking space? And what we're seeing is, even though the Class A office space is commanding more of a premium because they're trying to move into buildings with amenities in an effort to lure their workers in, they're taking up less space than they used to because they're allowing workers still to come in just a couple days a week. PNC may be the tip of the spear, as you will, getting people in 5 days a week, but a lot of places are still going, okay, 3 days a week at least to have some, but they don't need the space they once did. Now, Class B space, firms, again, trying to attract their workers, are moving to Class A space. And so that we find is more net negative absorption in the downtown area, or they may be leaving the downtown altogether. There's sort of the other issue we have here in Pittsburgh is a lot of firms don't want to be in downtown because shortly after the pandemic and the events of 2020, it's kind of been seen as unsafe, even real or perceived. I mean, there's been a lot of efforts to make it safer than it was immediately in the pandemic and just after. Panhandlers, homeless, that kind of stuff. We had homeless encampments. A lot of people just didn't want to be downtown. We had a couple businesses very publicly moved. So when you look at that net absorption, some firms have left the downtown for other areas of Pittsburgh. The most popular is called the Fringe. The Fringe is what we call our strip district and the North Shore by the stadiums, or Oakland East End. And so in some cases, this net negative absorption means that they've moved out of downtown and elsewhere. Now, when you look at the net negative absorption in the Fringe, it actually is positive. And out in the Oakland East End, it's been fairly consistent. So it sort of lends a little credence to the fact that while there's net negative absorption in downtown Pittsburgh, the Fringe area and the Oakland East End area are doing pretty well.
Given this issue has been pervasive for years now, what options or projects have local and state politicians pursued to sort of improve these vacancy rates, and what should they be doing instead?
The common theme that we've always pushed is, well, if you made downtown safe again, and quite frankly, the economic environment is not very good, our town one-party rule for 100 years, taxes are high, the regulations are high, a lot of successful firms are kind of looked upon as, well, you're not paying your fair share, you should pay up. And so it hasn't been a very welcoming environment for the downtown area for businesses. The prevailing thought is, well, let's turn these old Class B buildings into apartments. This way we get rid of the office square footage and the vacancy rate gets better, right? If you change the denominator, you know, the numerator is vacant office space, the denominator is total office space. You change the denominator, it doesn't look so bad, which is just papering over the problem. Anyway, the developers are wanting to convert these downtown properties, but they're using taxpayer money to do it. The governor came riding into town announcing a $600 million economic development makeover, and our iconic golf tower got a lot of money to turn it from an office building into, I like the old mixed use analogy of, well, we'll have an apartment area here and we'll have a boutique hotel there, and then we'll throw some restaurants and some shops, and we're going to make this all nice and swell, but it'll no longer be an office building. And some other office buildings have started that conversion as well, again, with some taxpayer money, which we think is a misuse of taxpayer money. If these developers want to turn buildings into apartments, they're welcome to do so. Just assume the risk on your own. You shouldn't be getting money from the governor or the city or the county. You should do this on your own. And I think what's going to happen in the end is you're going to trade office vacancy rates for residential vacancy rates.
Thank you very much, Frank. As always, we invite our listeners to visit our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, for information on this brief and others. For Frank Gamrat, this is Alex Sodini, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
The Declaration of Independence established our God-given rights and gave birth to a new nation. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, talks about why the struggle to preserve those rights continues on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Nearly 250 years ago, a group of ordinary people took extraordinary steps to create a nation unlike any the world had ever seen. As the Declaration of Independence begins in 1776, when in the course of human events, those few words set into motion the world's greatest experiment in self-government, a republic grounded in fundamental rights that aren't granted, but instead protected by government. If you've visited Independence Hall in Philadelphia, you've stood in the very room where that grand experiment was first adopted, Originally the Pennsylvania State House, this Philadelphia landmark was the bastion of freedom and liberty, where leaders declared that all men are created equal and possess unalienable rights. This idea, once radical in 1776, remains powerful today. Our Commonwealth helped shape our country's most fundamental ideas. William Penn's 1680s frame of government enshrined religious freedom, making Pennsylvania a haven for those fleeing religious persecution. This diversity bred a society of freedom and civic responsibility, a culture that helped shape the documents that declared our nation free. However, liberties like these weren't handed down from on high. They grew from the bottom up, from communities where neighbors built schools, churches, businesses, civic institutions, long before the first iterations of our government could legislate. This bottom-up idea is the heart of Americans for Prosperity's One Small Step campaign. Progress follows when people step forward, take responsibility, and get to work. When you look back on human history, from harnessing flight to landing on the moon, each transformational leap began with a humble act of courage, curiosity, or conviction. That audacity, one of ordinary citizens willing to make one small step, is the engine that drives our innovation and our nation's prosperity. Today we're faced with familiar questions that plagued our founding fathers. Will we defend the freedoms passed down to us, or trade them in for stability in a world that constantly demands more government control, more spending, more rules? The founders believed in a limited government that protects the rule of law, honors individual dignity, and empowers everyday Americans. This moment on our country's 250th anniversary is a crossroads. Just as communities across Pennsylvania and America once chose liberty over control, we now choose whether to uphold those founding principles for future generations. Will we stand for accountability, for innovation, and for civic duty? Or will we let power drift toward top-down institutions that function without accountability? On this momentous anniversary year, we're asking you, what will your first step be? Will it be a conversation with a neighbor about an issue you care about, a letter to your elected official, or even joining our team as we canvass neighborhoods across the state? These small sacrifices taken together become the giant leaps of our collective history. As we reflect on our independence, past and future, from the Liberty Bell that once rang in this very state to every community forging opportunity today, remember that great leaps of freedom always start with one small step. It's incumbent upon each of us to take that first step once again. Join us as we honor our nation's history and celebrate 250 years of freedom. Learn more by heading to a250philly.com. Again, that's a250philly.com. This is Emily Bry, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. It is now time to start talking about the 2026 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier grassroots activist event of the year. This year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held April 9th through 11th at the Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Chris Ruddy, the founder and CEO of the Newsmax Cable Television Network. He will be joined by a wide array of speakers, panel presentations, and an expanded menu of workshops. Complete information and registration for the 2026 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now available at paleadershipconference.com. Join us for the conservative event of the year, the 2026 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. Registration is available at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Frederick W. Anton III Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.